I tried to find people that had this really successful business and had a life outside of it that actually resembled a life that I might want. So not like, you know, constantly at work or on calls when you're kind of at your kid's soccer game. Like, how do you actually build a business like that? And I found quite a few people, not a ton, but I found a few, and I found kind of the underlying through line or similarity through all these businesses was they had very clear systems. So I saw that systems really were the thing that was differentiating people from this business that was leading to burnout or overwhelm, or a business that didn't even resemble the thing that we thought we wanted, which was freedom and flexibility, versus this thing where, you know, it's like we get to build this business and life on our own terms.
Hi, I'm Chloe Decco, and with more than a decade of experience working with thought leaders, I've witnessed firsthand the impact of conviction combined with purpose-driven entrepreneurship. This podcast shows you how to authentically bring together leadership, equity, and marketing to build your authority so that you can grow your impact and scale your business. This is a space for elevating women's voices and redefining what it means to be a thought leader. Together, we'll unlock the potential of our bright voices and create a ripple effect of change that resonates far beyond the realms of business. This is the Bright Voices in Business podcast. Now let's dive into today's episode. Welcome back to the Bright Voices in Business podcast. Today, we're going to talk about how to make time for pursuing thought leadership so that you can scale your business and impact without adding a whole ton of extra work on your plate. And joining me today is a very special guest, Kate Rosenow. Kate is a business system strategist and the owner of Work Well with Kate, where she gives women tools to streamline their businesses so that they can make more profit and be less busy. Hi, Kate. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, Chloe. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I've been really looking forward to this conversation. One of the key things that I hear a lot from women entrepreneurs, especially those who have been in business for a couple of years, are saying like, I am at absolute max capacity. I really want to scale. I'm trying to get creative with how to do that. Maybe they're like pursuing different types of offers or bringing contractors in or hiring staff. And yet still, even with all this creative problem solving, they are struggling with growing their capacity in a way where they can spend their time wisely and on the things that make the most sense for them. And I know when I talk about thought leadership, they might be saying, great, that sounds wonderful, but how am I going to do that when I'm super busy? And so I thought you would be the perfect person to kind of talk through this, because not only do you offer and know a lot about how to make this happen, you've lived and breathed where they are today in the past. And so wanted to see if you could share a little bit about your story and how you ended up doing what you're doing today.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, it like gives me chills thinking about it, because I remember how stressed and overwhelmed I was when I was in that position. And I would give any amount of money to not be in that position. So I can totally sympathize with that, because you're right, I was totally there. So I started my first business in 2013. It was a career coaching platform for women. I started with a co-founder, and we were very lucky early on to see success. And so from the outside, our business was doing incredibly well. We were being featured in Forbes, had this great podcast. We had all these Instagram followers, newsletter subscribers. Like, it looked like the dream, quote unquote, that you see for business. But inside, it was an absolute dumpster fire hellscape, just like craziness, because we said yes to everything. We were trying to keep up with demands. We kind of had this like mentality of like, well, it might go away at some point, or there might be a time when these, you know, publications don't want to talk to us, or people aren't as excited about this thing. So let's like go, 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 move, 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 do everything we can, and kind of just never stop. And that led to, as you might imagine, extreme burnout and fatigue, in a position where I felt like I didn't even really want to run a business anymore. And the truth of it is, I didn't want to run a business like that. Like the traditional kind of, back in the day, we used to call it like the Gary Vee mentality of just like grind, 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 hustle, 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 sleep on the floor of someone's basement, like eat ramen noodles, and just like dedicate every waking moment to your business. And I was like, hey, I thought I wanted this, but like, I absolutely do not. And so I took about 6 months and tried to find people that had this really successful business and had a life outside of it that actually resembled a life that I might want. So not like, you know, constantly at work or on calls when you're kind of at your kid's soccer game. Like, how do you actually build a business like that? And I found quite a few people, not a ton, but I found a few, and I found kind of the underlying kind of like through line or similarity through all these businesses was they had very clear systems. They had very clear ways of doing things, processes and procedures so that that person could get out of the kind of like day-to-day or admin things or things that didn't require them to come in and do the things that really did require them. And so, you know, I would meet entrepreneurs that had 7 kids, that had a $1 million business, that were getting their PhD, all of us at the same time, and would like take time for my call and not be stressed about it at all. And like that to me was so foreign. And so I saw that systems really were the thing that was differentiating people from, you know, this business that was leading to burnout or overwhelm, or a business that didn't even resemble the thing that we thought we wanted, which was freedom and flexibility, versus this thing where, you know, it's like we get to build this business and life on our own terms. So I came back and kind of implemented slowly everything I had learned, and we continued to grow as a business. And it was just amazing to see the night and day difference whenever we started implementing systems. And so I exited that business and then decided this was the thing I really wanted to be doing. Cause at that time I had been out of college for a significant amount of time. And I felt that I was so far away from the career coaching, and I was getting so many more questions about how do you start a business? How do you run a business like this? I see you're going to visit family and doing these other things. Like, how are you able to do that and run this business? And so that became much more my passion. So that's really the why behind Work Well with Kate, is that experiencing that and realizing how bad a business can feel, even if it's successful, if you don't have the right systems in place. That realization to me really just became the driving force behind the work I do now.
Yeah, I love that story. And I think it resonates with a lot of people, because many entrepreneurs, I won't say everybody, but many entrepreneurs start a business because they do want that freedom and that flexibility, and they want to own their own calendar and be able to have this autonomy over their work. And yet it's so easy to fall into the trap of creating a business that doesn't offer that, because you're trying to do all the things that everybody else is telling you you should do, whether that's lessons or things you learned in your education or your career before that actually don't serve you as an entrepreneur. Or it's all the gurus out there with all their conflicting opinions about what you should do and how everybody needs to learn, like how to start a Pinterest account and use Pinterest for marketing. I could get on a whole tangent on that. So what you're doing is so important. And I love that being able to implement these systems really actually frees up the time to spend on what matters most in a business. And so I'm curious, from your perspective, because you work with lots of different business owners, what you feel business owners should be spending their time on instead of the in the weeds work that we tend to fall into a lot of the time?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And, you know, specifically with my clients, the way I differ from some of the strategists or the systems folks that I, you know, meet or see online, is that I always really start with the end goal in mind and really profit planning in mind. So all of my clients, we do a profit planning session first, because truthfully, you can build all kinds of systems, but systems are only going to work if you build them with the right goal in mind and if you build them with the vision of what you actually want. And so I want to know how much money you want to make, how many hours you want to work, how big of a team you're comfortable with, you know, how many days you want to be taking off. I want to know all of those things, because my recommendations for systems are really going to change. And so the kind of like short and like clean answer is I want you to do the things that really only you can do and is the best use of your time. But we figure that out through this profit planning and kind of business auditing session, where we say, okay, what is the ultimate goal? And what are the things that you want to be doing? And how much time do you want to be putting into your business? Because if you want to put 10 hours a week versus 40 hours a week, you know, the things you're going to be doing are a bit different, and your priorities are going to change that too. You know, there are certain things that I haven't outsourced that some folks come in my business and they're like, really? Like, you're still the one doing this? And for me, part of running a business is doing the things that I want to do. And so it's like, if I want to be, you know, writing the newsletters, or if I want to be coming up with the graphics, if that's enjoyable for me, that's a goal for me. Like, it's a goal for me to spend my time the way I want to spend it. Now, if my money wasn't what needed to be, and if, you know, the hours weren't where it needed to be, that would change and that would shift. So that's a big difference. I don't like people giving themselves out of like, well, I like it. I'm like, okay, well, everything else has to be in place first, and then do whatever you want with your time. But that's why I really focus on that profit planning session and focus on the numbers first, because then once we hit those goals, do whatever you want, work in your business as much as you want. But I want to know that we're building something that's going to get you where you need to be. And that always informs what you quote unquote should be doing with your time. And those priorities are a little bit different for everyone, but it's usually the things that only you can do are the best use of your time.
Yeah, definitely. What are some examples that typically like a CEO or founder could only do with, you know, it's only them that could do that specific activity or task? Do you have some examples you can share?
Yeah. I mean, specifically for thought leadership, and maybe this is controversial for some people listening, but like what you're selling is your perspective and your voice and your thoughts. And so really only you can be putting those to paper or thinking through those. And so it's maybe counterintuitive, but your work time might not look like work. It might look like you taking a walk and listening to your favorite book. It might look like you having coffee with someone in your industry to kind of chat through your ideas. And so when you're selling, you know, that product of like thoughts and opinions or methods of something, like that is the most important thing you can do. You can have someone build the sales funnel. You can have someone talk about the marketing and the PR. You can have someone to talk about the operations piece and how people are going to pay for it. But your thoughts need to be yours if that's what you're going to be like kind of selling and marketing to folks. And so I think the work that only you can do, especially for folks in that situation, whether it's program or a course or a TED Talk, is focus on that content and make it the best it can possibly be, because then the rest of it becomes so much more easy when that piece is done. I find so often people are like trying to figure out the Pinterest board, or they're like, I need to get on Kajabi. And I'm like, we don't have content yet. Like, we don't have a course. We don't have anything to put in there. So like, we're going to be paying this membership fee for whoever knows how long. And we actually need you to write the content, record it, film it, do whatever. And so often I see people, I call it productive procrastination, where it's like, you're doing things, but we're wasting time or procrastinating because we don't want to do the thing we know we really have to do that's maybe a little scary or out of our comfort zone. But it is the thing that no one else can do for you. You can't hire someone else to create your voice and create your methodology. At least to me, that lacks some authenticity and I wouldn't recommend it. But I think that specifically for the folks that are probably listening to this podcast, that to me is the best use of your time. And so going back to the business owner that I mentioned, who has like 7 kids, you know, this huge $1 million business, is getting on the phone with me. He spends his whole entire morning writing, and he's like, I don't care if it's good, I don't care if it's bad, like I'm just writing. And he became the number one writer on medium.com that way, because he was like, I know the most important thing I can do is come up with really compelling content. If I do that correctly, I can figure out everything else. But that's the thing that like I safeguard, like I have a bouncer at the door kind of thing, where it's like we're writing every single morning. And so I think for whoever's listening, like whatever you are offering, especially as either a service-based business or a thought leader, like that to me is the best use of your time.
Yeah, I love that. It's one of those things where I've shared this before, but you need to think about what your perspective or opinion is. And to be able to do that, you need time to do that. Like, we don't get strategic by like stuffing our calendar full and not creating space to think and reflect, understand what feels really authentic when we respond to maybe a trend or a current event. And so actually having like calendar time blocked to take a walk or to journal or to reflect on something helps you form that perspective. And then you can hire somebody like a coach or somebody who can ask you questions to kind of pull things out of you that you didn't realize maybe were buried, or you didn't look at something a certain way. But yeah, like having that special time just for yourself to get really clear on who you are and what matters to you and those juicy bits that nobody else can really tell you is really important. And then being the one as the thought leader, like you have to be the face of your own thought leadership. You can't outsource that. Nobody can do that for you. And so making sure you are the one that is the one speaking or doing the media interview or the speaker for a course, so to speak, just being really smart about what you can do versus what you can outsource, which I think you did a really great job kind of differentiating, because we can get lost that productive procrastination is so real. It feels like we're like super busy and we're just, we're getting things done, but it's not the stuff that's moving the needle forward.
Absolutely. And that's why I actually am a really big advocate of hiring coaches, not to outsource things or consultants or whoever you need to kind of help you in that journey. Because to me, the time you're spending with your coach or the consultant or the person that's helping you, like that is the work time. Like that is the thing that we like don't realize is the real work. And so even if you're not outsourcing it, you know, for a couple of my clients, we joke that like them hiring an assistant was just them hiring like an accountability buddy. They're like, I would have never done this, but now that this person needs this thing from me or is asking me about it, like I've got to deliver this to them. And so I think that if it's not pure outsourcing, like if it's not someone totally owning that project, there are hybrid versions of that where it's like, okay, I'm meeting with my coach and I know that's going to force me to write before I have that next meeting, or it's going to force me to record that new video. Or for me, like I have a videographer come to my house once a month who's like, I'm here to record the reels. You know, you don't get to just like sit on the couch anymore and think about the reels. Like we're here, we've got the lights, we got the camera, we've got the, you know, teleprompter set up, we've got it all done. And that to me helps me not every day think like, I should be doing a reel. I should be doing a reel. I should. And it's like, I no longer have that voice, which is so much heavier than just doing it. Like it takes us 3 hours to record 60, 70 reels. And like, then we're done. We're done for like sometimes 6 months. And so I think sometimes we make it so much harder and bigger than it needs to be. And that to me is where outsourcing comes into play. Not necessarily having to get everything off your plate. Some things you can completely outsource, but some things it's like, I need you to be here with the camera. I'm going to say the things, but you're going to record it, edit it, put the captions on. And so I think sometimes we get stuck on like, I want to outsource social media. It's like, whoa, that's really like 80 tasks in one. Like which ones? I can outsource this piece, but not this piece. Or like I can have someone write the captions or make the pretty graphics, but like it's my words. No one's going to be reading my Instagram thinking, did she write this? Or I don't want anyone reading it. And it's something that like maybe I wouldn't even condone, or it's watered down because someone else wrote it and it doesn't sound like me. And so I think that that's even a place where sometimes we get stuck and we're like, well, I can do this part, or I should be the one doing this. It's like, you can have help, you can have support. You don't have to like outsource doesn't mean all or none, essentially.
Yeah, that's a great example with the social, because coming from an agency background, delegating and outsourcing is like pretty natural for me. And yet when I first started my business, I was like, I want to outsource social because out of all the marketing things I could do, it's not my favorite thing to do. And I hired somebody and she was wonderful and lovely and also very green because she had just graduated school. And so I knew it would take some heavy lifting to kind of coach her on my version of social media. And even with that, it did feel very watered down and diluted because I wasn't clear on my own message. So how in the world was she going to be clear on what I wanted her to say or do? And so it felt like it lacked authenticity. It felt like it lacked my own voice. And I think, again, we have to be smart about like what parts we delegate to and not give 80 tasks to somebody when you're not even ready, you know, necessarily to transfer that knowledge so that somebody can do that work on your behalf as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Easily the most important work I've done in my business looks like vacation probably to a lot of people. I call it like a team retreat for one. Like I have like my team retreat by myself in the mountains. And I'm like, just thinking through these problems that either clients have brought to me or things that are on the new horizon, or like, you know, AI becomes this huge new thing. Okay, well, let me spend time because this impacts everything that I do. Like it looks kind of like just being on my computer, like tick-tacking away, like a course or what have you. But that's so important for me, so that everyone else on my team can do what they need to do. Because if we know something new or different or something's changed, especially in systems that we're in, they change weekly. Like some of the most important stuff I do is just read newsletters and, you know, stay up to date on things and think through new problems, new initiatives. And so I think we're so used to in a 9-to-5 role looking like we're working, or businesses like emails, documents, Excel sheets, having meetings, putting things on the calendar, responding to the email. It's like, as a business owner, it doesn't always look like that. And so it can be deceiving, or we have to have this unlearning moment of like, actually, work's probably going to look a little different and we need to be okay with it.
Yeah, that unlearning is the biggest surprise that I experienced in taking entrepreneurship on. I didn't realize how much of my, it was almost like my self-worth was wrapped up in like how many emails I needed to respond to and chats I needed to respond to and how full my calendar was with meetings. And I realized I was kind of wearing busy as a badge of honor and having to take a step back and realize like that is not how I'm going to be successful as an entrepreneur. Yes, it's important to respond to emails and it's important to have meetings with the right people. And, you know, there are other things that are going to be a better use of my time and energy. So, yeah, it totally resonates with me that you're recommending that.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious, outside of kind of this productive procrastination, what other kind of challenges or pitfalls do you, women entrepreneurs tend to fall in that prevent them from maybe using their time and their energy in the best ways?
Yeah, I think the one that I come across most often is when there are things that should or could be outsourced. And there's this feeling of like, I do it best, or there's this ownership over it, or like, it's going to take so much time to explain it to them. So I'm just going to do it. And it's not worth it to forward her this message because, you know, it'll take her 10 minutes and I'm going to hop on the phone. And the truth is, and no one wants to say this, I'm happy to say it because I've gotten to this place in my career and I don't want to work with people that aren't ready to do the work, but outsourcing is not better immediately. Like, outsourcing is actually going to make your business worse in the short term, because now on top of doing all the things, you have someone who doesn't know about the things that you're having to tell about the things, and you're having to create a lot of things, and we're making SOPs and we're finding new people and we're spending more money. And so for like 3 to 6 months, sometimes it can be like, actually, you've just made my business a lot worse. Like, you've made everything harder. I'm spending more money, more time, more effort. But then it's exponential from there. It gets, 80 times easier. And so it's so funny when I'll work with business owners and like, we'll get to like, maybe it's like week 8 and we're talking about the SOPs and they're like, I'm having to explain to someone how to like edit their signature to look like the rest of our company's signatures. Like, this is BS. Like, what, how am I having to spend all this time doing that? But building those foundational systems is what's going to allow for you to like go on vacation for 3 months and the ship is still sailing and everything's good from there. Some people might have seen it on my Instagram recently, but I shared that like I have someone taking over my client communications while I go on my delayed honeymoon. And that was so easy, but it's only because it wasn't easy like 3 years ago when I put all that stuff together. Like, here's how to respond to these types of messages, and here's where to find them, and here's everyone's communication. And if someone says this to you, you respond with that. So in the short term, outsourcing is harder. And I just want people to know, like, I'm putting in this work now so that it gets 10 times easier down the road, because it is not going to feel better immediately. I think that's kind of the disillusion some people feel, and they kind of have this self-fulfilling prophecy of like, I don't think it's worth it to outsource. I think it's going to be harder. And they're right in the short term. But if you ever want to grow, if you ever want, I know you and I have this shared value of like sustainability in your business. If you ever want your business to feel sustainable and be able to grow, that part is essential. It has to happen. And so delaying that or postponing that because you feel some type of ownership or believing we're the only ones that can do it, that to me can be a huge problem. And in some areas of our business, like, done is better than perfect. So like the example I give all the time is like, Bill Gates is not coding at Microsoft. You know, it's like, he's out there meeting with Warren Buffett. He's like doing this IPO. He's better at coding than some of these people, for sure. No question. Like, there's some people working for him that aren't as good at that job. But if he said, I'm better at all of these things than all these people, I'm going to do all of them, there's no way Microsoft would have become what it became, because he would be too busy doing all these little things. So like, that goes back to the conversation we have of like, how should we be spending our time? And sometimes we don't even see the forest through the trees of like, me doing each of these little things means I'm not on this podcast, or I'm not meeting with this important, you know, potential client, or I'm not going to that thing where I could have met that person that gets me on the TED Talk stage or on Good Morning America. And so I think sometimes we don't even realize what we're missing out on. And we're so afraid of that thing that is inevitable, but is actually going to make everything better, which is the really hard work of putting the systems in place.
Yeah, it's definitely an investment up front. And yeah, it pays dividends down the road. Because you are doing the hard work now. Like, if we think about the keeping the end in mind, like if the end in mind is that you want to take 3 months to go on a vacation and tour Europe, and this work right now enables you to be able to do that later. So,
yeah.
This kind of reminds me, this is slightly off topic, but I know that you have a story to tell about somebody who kept showing up consistently, even when it was hard for their business. And I know you've shared a little bit about like how people can sometimes get really critical of the person who keeps showing up for their business, even though maybe they have a small following or they have something. And it just kind of like what you were saying before piqued that story in my mind. So do you mind sharing a little bit about this person who showed up for his 10 attendees over and over again?
Absolutely. And the catalyst for me telling that story was these women on a podcast talking about and like making fun of the fact that people would have like 20 followers and they're like trying to build their business or like be an influencer. They're like, how ridiculous. And you like are making yourself look so silly and stupid and you shouldn't be embarrassed. And like that gives me the ick more than anything. Like it makes me disgusted thinking about that, because these women on this podcast, like you didn't start with 10,000 followers. There was a time when you had 30 or 10 or 2 followers. Like everyone started somewhere. And so to like get to the top of that mountain and be critical of people climbing it to me feels outrageous. And like the phrase I always give clients when they're, you know, feeling like they have too small of an audience is like, don't be afraid to be seen trying. Like, what is embarrassing about trying? Like people will make fun of it until you're successful. And then you're like, they're asking for your advice. Like this happened to me. Some of my high school friends, like folks that I know early on in my business were like, what is she doing? Like she doesn't have a job. She's just like on here posting these random articles. Like what is happening? Those same people now have been like, I'm thinking of starting a business. Like, what do you think? So I always just like to preface. But the story I like to share is actually the first person that I worked for after I left my corporate job. I was kind of like doing this hybrid of like trying to start my business. And this was someone that was very entrepreneurial. So he was like, you go, girl, you work on your stuff. And if you can also work on my stuff, you can be making money while you build. That's a whole nother tangent, but I'm a big believer in that and not just like fully taking the leap if it doesn't serve you. Anyway, this man's name was Paul Brunson, and he's a dating and relationship coach. And he would do these like matchmaker Mondays. So he would like hop on live and be like, okay, like let's try and get people in here and see if they're single folks. And like, let's see if we can match them. And, you know, just like you said, there were very few people there. Like his mom was one of the like 5 people in there for a long time. And us just like kind of cheering him on, but like, okay, there's not that many people here. But he was so confident in the fact that this was a valuable thing and the fact that this was something that he really felt was necessary to put into the world for his specific view on love and relationships. And it turned out that eventually, after like, I think a few weeks or months of doing it, one of those very few people tuning in was Oprah Winfrey. And so he ended up being offered this show called Lovetown USA, worked with Oprah on it, was a co-host with Oprah. And now he's one of the hosts of Married at First Sight in the UK, has his own show in the UK, has this great column, has hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers, has these insane opportunities, book deals. Like, in fact, I think he just came out with a book maybe 2 weeks ago. Anyway, all of that to say, like, it would be really easy to look at that and be like, guys, there's no one coming. What if he would have stopped that one live before Oprah hopped on? And his whole life is completely different because of that one experience. And so I think for so many folks, they'll see other people on like TikTok or Instagram, and they're like, they have tens of thousands of followers, or, you know, they have this huge thing, or this is really popular. Well, they started with something that looked kind of cringy. Like I always think like cringy is the like necessary stage before all the things we want. If you would have seen a lot of the videos I put out in like 2014, 2016, 2018, like they look crazy, I'm sure, in comparison to like the stuff I'm doing now. And then in 2019, we had a sold out conference of 300 women in Atlanta. So again, it's like you can't get that audience immediately. And so you have to work towards it. And the only way to get to that place is to experience the awkwardness and the embarrassment or whatever you want to call it before you get there. That's the only way.
Yeah. And I love that story of just keep showing up. I've heard so many times that it's the person that kept going even when it was hard. And because it kept going, that's when they got their breakthrough. And that story, I think, is a really great example of that. And he, you know, again, he could have been like, I'm going to do like productive procrastination and work on all these other things. And instead, he chose to use his voice and his face to share his perspectives and opinions on the relationship and dating world and show up consistently. And the right people were attracted to what he had to say. And it landed him some really awesome opportunities that would never have happened if he didn't use his voice, didn't use his perspective, and decided it wasn't a good use of his time when in reality it was exactly what he should have been doing.
Exactly. One thing that people don't realize either is that the things that can be perceived as weaknesses are sometimes the reason why you're successful. So this was a relatively young Black man working as a matchmaker. That is not something you see every day. And so like in some ways you think like you're not meant for this space. Like you don't see yourself in this space. And that's exactly why Oprah wanted him. Because it's like, yeah, I don't see anyone like you in this space. And for you to come on as a Black man and be able to relate to some of these folks where like historically it's been like the Patty Sangers of the world, like, yeah, actually that's the reason why you're so successful here. And so I even like caution people to that and like their specific version of whatever they're doing. Another great example of this is if people are on TikTok, they know there's this woman named Emily Mariko. She like does these cooking videos and she went viral during the pandemic because she made the specific salmon dish. Most people don't know, like she had been making these videos. She doesn't say anything in the videos. She just like makes the food and like it's done. There's literally no noise. Like there would be people who would be like a content strategist would be like, you have to talk fast and you have to start with a hook and you have to do this. And then she was like, no, I'm going to do it my way. And it took her a long time. She was creating content with very low views for a very long time. And then this video of her making salmon during pandemic took off. And now she has this insane, like millions of followers doing it the same way. Doesn't talk, doesn't say anything, doesn't have any crazy hook. It is just kind of like the visual version of ASMR, like making something really pretty, like Tabitha Brown's the same way. And so I just think it's so tempting to say like, maybe I'm not made for this, or like, I have to do it someone else's way. Going back to like, I'm going to do it in their voice because they seem to be successful. It's like, actually, like, if you are really passionate and confident about the way you're doing something, like keep going, because there are lots of examples, just as many examples of people doing it in a different way that have also been successful.
Yeah. And that, to me, she was being really authentic to herself. And when you're authentic to yourself, you attract the right people, like the actual people that you should be attracting and that you're excited to surround yourself with. And so there is something to be said about like, yes, there are all these like social media strategies and things that, you know, you could do. And at the end of the day, that changes. The algorithm changes, the way we market things changes. But you, like, you are the constant, right? And so how can you, even though you're growing and evolving, like, at your core, you're a constant. And so how do you really just tap into who your authentic self is and show up in that way? Because that's ultimately what's going to draw the right people in.
1,000%. I couldn't have said it any better. And like, there's so many examples of this in like that recent example. I'm giving so many TikTok references, but I've just been talking to people about these things recently where like a lot of people hear that like everyone has a short attention span. You have to make content that's short. You have to make it snappy. And like, there is so much evidence that that's not the case. Even podcasts, like most podcasts now are like an hour and a half. And I will listen to a podcast all the way through, or like the Risa Tisa series. She did like a 50-part series about this guy that she married. Each video was 10 minutes. It's like 550 minutes. Millions of people watched every single video. And so again, it's like, are you creating content worthy of watching is much more important than like all of the tricks and little things. I mean, it's exactly what we were saying earlier, but just in a different way of like, focus on the content being so good that the format and the length and the like, you know, taglines and whatever, like those don't matter because the content is so good. People are going to.
Yeah. And they're going to make time to consume it. If it's valuable to them, they'll make time for it for sure. Let's get a little into like, what can a woman entrepreneur do to start, you know, systemizing and creating that space for herself so she can focus on some of these more meaningful parts of her business? What would you recommend that they start thinking about or start doing?
If you're in a position right now where like you're listening to this and feeling really overwhelmed, the thing that I do every single time, and I'll even do it now sometimes quarterly just to like kind of like as a, you know, self check-in and kind of like a routine that I've built up, is something that I call per stump. And so that probably sounds like a weird name to anyone who's not familiar with the exercise. But essentially, I think about the way that we have purses, and when we first get a purse, we put our wallet, our phone, and our keys in it. And we're like, this is great. Like, I have the things that I need. I'm off to the grocery store. 3 months later, you're like, I have glitter. I have half-eaten crackers. I have like my kids' art that I had to shove in my purse because I went to their school for something. And it's so cluttered that we can't even find the things that like the purse is meant to hold. Like, we can't find the keys in the bag. And we actually left them somewhere because we didn't realize they were in our bag because our bag is full of so many other things. The exact same thing happens in our business where we're like, all right, I got my bank account. I got my website. I got my like headshots. I'm ready to go. And then all of a sudden you're on Instagram and you're like, I got to do Pinterest and like, I got to get on Kajabi and I got to do Twitter. And if I'm not doing these hooks and doing these dances, and what about these trends? And oh, actually I need to go to this BNI networking event and I'm supposed to join the junior league. And you've crowded your purse with so many things that now you're like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing anymore. Like, what is the thing that is going to move the needle? And so I call it a purse dump because I want us to kind of metaphorically dump all of those things in our business onto a piece of paper and say like, okay, let's organize these things. Let's get them in the right place, in the right hands, in the right, you know, days of the week in our calendar so that it doesn't feel overwhelming, so that we can have, you know, a business or a metaphorical purse that feels organized and put together and isn't overwhelming. And so the way I do that is I literally will write down stream of consciousness, just like everything that's on my either mental to-do list, or I'll look back over my calendar over the past 30 days and just see everything that was made a priority on my calendar. So what are all the things that are like kind of looming in my head that I know need to get done? What are all the things that I've done with my time? I write them all out. It takes a long time. It takes a long time for most women. Sometimes when I do this live with people like at a coaching session, I'll be like, all right, now write everything. And they just laugh because they're like, it'll take me 5 hours. I'm like, even better. That means you need this even more. It's going to take a long time. So write out all of the things. And the first thing I want you to do is look at that list. And if there's anything that's not essential, like doesn't have to happen, like taxes or, you know, coaching sessions, things that have to happen. And if it's not revenue generating, I want it to go away. So like, if we're in that overwhelmed state and there's anything that's not essential and not revenue generating, it goes. So maybe it's that like Pinterest course. You've been doing the Pinterest for 6 months. And like, it's just not feeling aligned with what you have to do. And you have all of these other priorities on your plate or things that you know are bigger priorities, those things go. So that's the first thing. The next thing that I do is look through that list and try and find everything that I can automate. So there's things on that list inevitably that are like send contracts, go get groceries, you know, send invoices. There's a million things. I mean, I could go on and on about all the things you can automate, but I want us to kind of like denote in some way, either put an A next to it. I usually put an A next to it, like I'm going to automate it, and look through that list and check out everything we can automate. The reason I like doing this in this particular structure is because when we look at everything we need to automate all at once, then we see there's probably a program or a handful of programs that can handle all of it. One of the ways a lot of the business owners I work with get overwhelmed is they have like one software for this thing, one software for that thing, one software for this thing. And it's like, okay, we're doing contracts over here. We're doing invoices over here. We're doing client documents over here. And it feels overwhelming. And then we get a tech junkyard graveyard that we don't want. And so when we do a purse dump and look at all these things we can automate, we can say, is there a program that can host courses, have a portal for my clients, send invoices, send contracts, host my webinars, deliver my digital products? And a lot of times there are great programs and platforms that do that, but we wouldn't know to look for all of those things all at once if we didn't do it this way. So I recommend doing that. It's the same thing for like, you know, personal side stuff. We want to look for things that we can like Johanna, and there's all these other platforms where you can like automate a lot of your home stuff or appointments or scheduling. So the same thing happens in your personal life. You can do that as well. And then next after automation, I see what can I outsource? So if it can't be automated, it has to happen. It's going to be revenue generating potentially, or it's something that just needs to get done. Then I look at outsourcing. So I want to look at everything on my list. And is there anything on my list that's been there for more than 90 days? And if it has, then like I have to outsource in some way. So like that means like, and maybe it's writing the book. Okay, I can't outsource writing the book, but like I have to get a book coach. I'm outsourcing the accountability of it. And so I'm going to get someone to help do this piece of it. Or if it is something like, you know, admin work, we maybe need a VA and we're wanting to outsource maybe like sending the recaps of the coaching calls, or accounting is a big one that's like first to go off the plate of like, I don't have to do it. I'm not an accountant. Like, I'm giving this to someone to like do all the bookkeeping and taxes. And so looking through that, you can kind of start to create a job description, very similar to like looking for a software that can handle a lot of the things you want to automate. You can look at that list and say, hey, is there maybe like one person who I could outsource a lot of these things to? And a lot of times that's like an assistant, a virtual assistant, an online business manager, someone that can look at all of those things and take them on all those responsibilities that you don't have to do. And then usually at that point, what's left on your list is the stuff that you have to do. Like we were saying, those are the things that like you have to focus on as the business owner. They're things that only you can do. And then when I look at that list, I do my best to do what I call batching, which most people are familiar with this concept if they've been working kind of like in this world for a while. But if you're not, it's the concept of like taking a block of time, whether it's a half day or a full day or like certain afternoons, and allotting it for certain things, whether it's writing or coaching or networking, whatever those things are that you know you need to do that only you can do, creating time on your calendar specifically for those things. And then don't wait for things to come on to then like tell people about those boundaries or to tell people about those pockets of time. Whenever I do that, or I'll reorganize my batching schedule, I do like what I call my board of advisors kind of like meeting. And it's like my husband and our nanny and like, you know, my assistant. And I'm like, okay, here's the way like mom, wife, business owner is like running her life now. And we're going to try it this way for a while. So like on Wednesday mornings, like don't put anything on the calendar. Don't try and like, you know, get my attention for something. I'm going to be doing this thing. And so I think that's a place where a lot of people fail to communicate. And so in that way, like the plan seems to go by the wayside, or it doesn't work, or people will be like, oh, well, these people are always bothering me, or like they always put stuff on my calendar, or they can only do Wednesdays. Like, let people know what you're trying to accomplish. And when you try and have that conversation proactively, I find it can go so much better than just hoping people can read your mind and knowing that you like want a totally empty day on Wednesdays to be able to write your book or brainstorm or what have you. So that was a very long-winded explanation of like how women can do that. But that's the way I usually go through it. And again, I go through it about every quarter, like 3 months, just to make sure things haven't snuck on my plate that I don't want there. Or inevitably a schedule has changed. Like my husband maybe is now like traveling more, or our nanny is having like this specific thing and wanting to, you know, do this in the afternoons. So inevitably the schedule changes a little bit. So it's kind of like a nice refresher point for everyone of like, okay, does this schedule still work for us as a family and as a business? And if not, what do we need to change?
Yeah, I love that. I was thinking of like when I go through like my subscriptions personally, like what I'm all signed up for. And then it's like, oh, there's new ones now and I probably need to re-audit. And so it's kind of similar in terms of your time. Like we get new things that get added to our plate, or ideas that we have that we get excited about, and actually sitting down and being really honest with ourselves. And so I imagine that going through this process can be kind of confronting and vulnerable for people. What normally goes through someone's head when they're having to spend this time thinking about how they're using their time and how they're living their life, essentially, right? Because as entrepreneurs, our businesses are very personal, whether or not we realize it sometimes. And so what typically goes through someone's head when they're going through this kind of process?
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, I don't know if there's a typical, because it does really run the gamut. In fact, I presented this specific exercise at a women's retreat in Louisiana in January. And I remember after doing the exercise, I was like, are there any questions? And one woman like shot her hand up immediately. And I was like, yeah. She was like, laundry isn't working out. She was like, I know it's not worth my time. I know I should outsource it. I've tried 4 different people to outsource it to. None of them have been able to do it in the way that I want to do it. I am unwilling to have like dirty laundry around the house. Like, what do I do? And so there are times where like we realize there's something on that list that it's like, this is like the pain in my side, the thorn. And like, maybe we have to come up with really creative solutions. But inevitably, like you said, like we're confronted with the fact that like, we've done this maybe 5 times over the course of a year and writing the book is still on the list, or like, you know, Instagram's still on the list, or laundry is still on the list and we can't figure out what to do with it. And so I think that's when the real work comes in. Like the exercise like takes time, but like the real work is thinking through the solutions. Like, what are the things that are going to work for us? And so like in the laundry example, we realized that kind of like we were talking about earlier, like you actually have to create the process in the system before you invite someone in to help you. And so she was kind of just hoping, like, when these people came in to do the laundry, she would maybe give them, like, in a passing comment, like, oh, I really like them when they're, like, put over here, or it'd be great if you could separate them into family members, but, like, wouldn't have, like, a legit list of, like, this is how we do the laundry, and, like, have someone follow that. Or there was someone else at that retreat that was like, I don't think I can afford to hire someone to do that, but, like, I don't feel like I have a partner in, like, the person that I share a household with. And so how do I, you know, like, offload some of the burden I have? And so, again, it starts to get really personal and, like, dive into these things that, like, are maybe a lot more complex than we realize. If anyone's heard or have read the book Fair Play, like, that can bring up a lot of, like, emotions and, like, crazy things that are happening in, like, your relationship dynamic. Fair Play is a book by Eve Donsky about basically the work and mental load of, like, people in a household. And so, again, like, on the surface, it seems like do, like, a little exercise that we're writing on our little paper with our pen, but it becomes, like you said, this huge confronting thing, whether it's personal or in our business. And we realize, like, hey, 2 years ago, I said I was going to start this course, and then I just saw someone launch the exact same thing on Instagram, and I'm feeling triggered by that because now I've, like, wasted 2 years and haven't made any progress. You know, it's like starts to bring up some of those things. So I think ultimately it's a really good thing that it brings up those feelings, because it's showing us, kind of like holding a mirror to ourselves. And the more honest we can be with ourselves about how we're spending our time or what our priorities are, or the fact that we haven't found solutions yet, but we need to, that will kind of naturally rearrange our schedule, or at least rearrange our conversations so that we are addressing those things.
Yeah, absolutely. That getting honest with yourself is for a purpose, and that purpose is to be spending your time and your energy in the ways that will move the needle forward for your business, but also help you live the life that you desire. And so I think even though it is a confronting exercise, it might require you to take some responsibility that you hadn't been doing before for your business. It also will serve you in the long term for sure. I have heard from a couple of women entrepreneurs that I've spoken with that they want to outsource, but they have a hard time finding the right person, similar to this laundry story. But in a business context, it's like, I'm trying to find the right person. I'm nervous. I feel like I've been burned before. You know, all these things. Do you have any advice on how somebody could find the right person for whatever that task or activity might be?
Such a good question. And you're right, it comes up so often. I think the first thing you can do, and again, I probably sound like a broken record, is like write out exactly what you want them to be doing and like create those processes before they even come in. That's like the number one pitfall I see for folks that are like, I hired someone and like it was no help and I just wasted money. And I was like, well, like, yes, there is some responsibility on their part to do the thing they said they could do, but there's also a huge responsibility on your part to like have the right processes and procedures laid out for them so they know what to do. Or they'll be like, oh, they kept asking me questions. I'm like, yeah, like they've never done this before. So like you as the business owner have to take a lot of responsibility of like, I'm steering the ship. I'm giving the direction. I can't rely on someone else to direct my business or steer the ship. Yes, you can have folks that are proactive, but they have to be proactive in relation to like a vision and a system that you have. So that's the first thing. The second thing that I don't think people do enough is talk about the intangibles of working together. So like, I like to work at nights, or it's really important for me to have people that communicate with me and put exclamation points in their emails because it makes me feel like my team members are happier. Little things like that that you don't even realize until you start working with folks and think about the things that quote unquote didn't work out and realize like those are things I need to communicate proactively. So like one of my clients recently was talking about the fact that she was really hoping that a lot of the people she hired on her team would want to graduate to a role where they could work directly with clients and kind of own client relationships, more agency style. And she was like, I just am so frustrated they don't want to do that. I was like, well, when you brought them on, did you communicate that that was down the road one of your expectations or goals? And she was like, well, no, because like at that time, that wasn't part of the job description. And so sometimes I think we get stuck on like, hey, I need you to just do these things. And it's like, well, there's so much context for my larger vision that can sometimes be really helpful. And so I just did this recently. I'm partnering with someone on a new project. And I said, you know, here's my vision for my contribution to this. I don't see it as the top priority. I don't see it as like the main thing that is going to be consuming my time. And if that's okay with you, I'd love to proceed. But if you're looking for someone that like this is their only, you know, business endeavor. That's not me. And so things like that are really helpful. Or I want to have someone long term, or I want someone that can grow into this partner with me, or I want someone that uses Slack or texts or is okay with phone calls. Like, we don't talk enough about the intangibles. And those are a lot of times the things that like break the relationship and make it not work. And so getting really clear on those pieces, I think, can be huge. In terms of like very tactical and practical advice, there's this website called outsourcingwithlove.com. And it's like these vetted folks. It's essentially like a dating site for like business owners and contractors, where you can go and like look at the profiles and like see who you like and like contact them and communicate with them. And so those are some vetted contractors that I think are great. I personally have hired wonderful women off of that site. I just haven't seen any men on there. So I've only seen women on that site, but I've hired some great folks off there. And then if you're really good at your keywords and you know exactly what you're looking for, Upwork.com is great if you know what you're looking for. Like, yes, there is the potential for you to hire someone that is not a good fit for the thing that you want. But like, you have to be responsible for like the strategy and thoughtfulness and intentionality behind searching for someone. Because a lot of times folks will hop on there, they're like, I hired someone to do social media and like it was a total bust and like nothing came from it. And I was like, okay, well, what did you expect from them? And like, what did they deliver? And I'm like, you hired an 18-year-old from the Philippines to write content about like your nutrition and wellness program for like women with menopause. What did we think was going to happen? Like, let's use our thinking caps and think about like, okay, well, what tools do I need? How can I equip them with the right things that they need to be able to be successful? Because at some point, like, you have to take ownership over what you're wanting to, you know, create in your business, and then who's going to be the best person for that. And so I think if you're really specific about what you're looking for and can communicate that well, Upwork is a great place to find folks. And then I also will like search on Instagram. I'll search keywords. I'll search like ads manager. I'll search Pinterest coach. I'll search webinar expert, Kajabi expert, Dubsado expert. Like, if I know those keywords and I search, like, a lot of people have those in their bios for a reason, and it's so that they can be found. And so I think that that's another great way to do it. And then I'm a big fan of doing trial runs. So I'll say like, hey, we're going to do a 30 to 90 day contract. After that time, we can reassess and see if this is a good fit. So I don't have to make that long-term commitment necessarily, or I can give them a test project to see how they do. So I'm like, okay, I'm willing to pay someone to test this out. And I don't have to immediately get into, quote unquote, a long-term relationship with them before I know if it's working or not. So those are some of the things that I think about when I'm hiring or looking for someone that can be helpful. But those websites, and then again, getting really clear on the processes and the intangibles that are important to me and the people I work with, that I think can make for a winning combination.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot about expectation setting for both sides. Like, what can you expect of the person you're hiring, and what can they expect from you? I know in the agency world, sometimes we would have people hire us and be like, okay, go ahead, run the show. And we're like, hold on, wait a second. Like, we need to like establish relationship. We need to understand your business. We cannot do a good job if we don't get the information we need from you. We can't do a press release if we don't know what news is happening for your company. And it's similar, like, if you hire a social media person, they need to know what offers you're going to be focusing on. You know, it's an investment to be able to do that. And I'm also hearing that the why can be really important too. So I've recently heard an example of somebody who, like, hired somebody else to help them write cards to all of their clients to, you know, express their gratitude and build that client relationship. And they forgot to share why they wanted them to be handwritten. And so the person, they found like this automated way to send all these cards out for them, thinking, hey, this is going to save you time and money. You know, that was their why. And originally that person was so upset that they did not handwrite the cards, but they never shared like, hey, I want it handwritten because I want that person to feel special. Like, I took the time to write a card just for them so that they know I'm thinking about them and feel that special connection and relationship. And so, again, taking time to say, hey, here's what I want you to do. This is how I want you to do it. But also, here's why. Like, this is why this is important and how it connects to the bigger vision of my company, of my mission, so that that person, even if they get creative and they find a different way to do something, because I think we do have to give some autonomy there, depending on what the task is. they at least understand the why of what you're assigning them so that they're not losing sight of the whole purpose in the first place.
Absolutely. And even things as basic as like, hey, you know, like what level priority it is. Like, hey, I'm going to add this to your list. Maybe it's like, hey, I want to make stickers for my podcast. And it's like, they've spent all afternoon making stickers when they know you have a podcast to record tomorrow and the notes haven't been sent out. And it's like, hey, I want you to create these stickers. This is not as much of a priority, or do this after everything else that I've created. Like even something as simple as that, because we expect that people can like read our minds or intuit what we want. But like, if you email me today and you're like, hey, I want you to create stickers for my podcast, maybe it's because like something's happening tomorrow and you're like, you need the stickers for tomorrow. So exactly what you said, like sometimes we're not communicating that well enough and we're not setting that expectation. And because of that, it'll be quote unquote not a good fit, when actually we didn't realize that like people need context. And it's helpful to know like, hey, this is something that it's fine for you to do at midnight, or this is something that's not going to be a priority for a month, or like, it's really important that we spell check everything on this site because this client has been burned before by spell check. Like, you know, it's like even those specific things, like the client concierge that I'm hiring for when I go on my honeymoon. It's like, you know, with this person, this is their priority. This is the thing that they care about. With this client, this is their priority. Like if you didn't talk to them the whole time I was gone, they wouldn't care. Where if this person like wants communication from you every single day and they want to be hearing this and they want to have this type of information. And so again, I think communicating that, even if you do have a specific system, can be so helpful.
Yeah. And that I think also speaks to the fact that relationships are so nuanced, right? Like every person is different. Every client is different. And providing a place where someone can have that context that they might need to be successful in whatever role you've given them, I think is really important. So thank you for sharing some of those kind of recommendations for hiring, because I know that can be a really prevalent concern for women when they do start to embrace the idea of outsourcing, but maybe aren't fully on board yet because they've either had a bad experience in the past or letting go of something that they feel like they've mastered or they're really good at or they love to do might be hard if they have high standards, and they should have high standards, but high standards that they feel like other people can't do. And so I think you've given them some really good practical ways that they can think about that.
I'm so glad.
Okay. So thank you so much, Kate, for sharing all your tips around building sustainable business so that women entrepreneurs can really focus on the things that make the most sense for them and have a business that enables them to live the life that they want to live, because that's usually why we go into business in the first place. So if somebody is interested in learning more about you and what you do, where can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say I'm most active on Instagram. So I'm Work Well with Kate on Instagram. And then you can find me at workwellwithkate.com. And that has kind of, you know, all the latest and greatest of stuff that we're doing. And then if you have any questions, please feel free to DM or reach out. My email is kate@workwellwithkate. We're always happy to answer any questions or share any resources that we have.
Thanks so much, Kate. I know the work that you do is so great and empowering and enabling women to create these businesses that actually fulfill their lives. And so I'm really excited to be able to share your insights with my listeners, and definitely recommend anybody to reach out to Kate who might need some help with systemizing their processes and getting their business organized in a way that enables them to have a better, more sustainable business along the way. So thank you, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining me today. If you enjoyed this episode, invite your entrepreneur friends to tune in. Don't forget to connect with me on Instagram at West Haven Coaching. I would absolutely love to hear your thoughts on today's episode and continue the conversation with you there. And before you go, be sure to download my free guide, 5 Steps to Building Your Authentic Authority, which will walk you through how to grow your thought leadership in a way that's true to who you are and what you stand for. You can find the guide at westhavencoaching.com/steps or follow the link in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. Together, we are changing the faces and voices of thought leadership. Until next time, keep leading with authenticity and impact.